Good morning, and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, affectionately known as WUF. Once again, we are gathering in virtual community as we continue to navigate our relationship with COVID. My name is Salima Mawson. My pronouns are she and her, and it is such a privilege this morning to be sharing time with you. Whoever, wherever, and however you are. Whatever your age, abilities, color of your skin, whomever you love, how you identify your gender, or where you call home. Whatever your relationship with the spirit of life may be, and however you are feeling this morning, you are very welcome here. You're welcome in the circle of compassion and care, as we continue to explore what it means to be people of intention. We are especially honored today to have Trish Jordan with us. She not only serves as the director of Red Lodge Transition Services, a communal setting for Native women being released from prison, but is the lead volunteer for Native American Religious Services at the Coffee Creek Women's Correctional Facility. Trish recently completed a term on the Leadership Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Council for Clackamas County and has been appointed by Governor Brown to the Justice Reinvestment Initiative Grant Committee. As the daughter of Creek and Miccosukee parents, Trish knows firsthand what it means to be an Indigenous American activist. She'll tell us more about herself later in the service and during our coffee hour at 11:30 when we get to talk about the service, share our personal joys and sorrows, ask questions, and get answers. We hope you'll be a part of that time with us together. The link is in your order of service, where you will also find a more extensive version of Trish's biography. If this is your first time with us and you don't have an order of service, please get in touch with our congregational administrator, whose contact information will appear on your screen later in the service. Now, if you are watching locally, we invite you to join us at 1 p.m. for a walkabout on our WUF grounds with Trish as she offers a Native American ceremonial blessing of the land we call ours. Right now, let's begin by lighting our chalice. The flame, of which symbolizes our shared faith. And let us consider these words attributed to a man named Noah Silk, also known as Chief Seattle. This we know, the earth does not belong to us. We belong to the earth. This we know, all things are connected like the blood which reunites one family. All things are connected. Whatever befalls the earth befalls the sons and daughters of the earth. We did not weave the web of life. We are merely a strand in it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. Please join me in our opening affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another.
The earth is our mother. We must take care of her. The earth is our mother. We must take care of her. Hey, Anna, ho, Anna, hey, Anna, ho. Hey-ya-na-ho, ya-na, hey-ya-na-ho.
The sky is our father. We must take care of him. The sky is our father. We must take care of him. Hey-ya-na-ho, ya-na, hey-ya-na-ho. Hey-ya-na-ho, ya-na, hey-ya-na-ho.
The rivers are our sisters. We must take care of them. The rivers are our sisters. We must take care of them.
Hey, yana ho, yana, hey, yana ho. Hey, yana ho, yana, hey, yana ho.
The trees are our brothers. We must take care of them. The trees are our brothers. We must take care.
Throughout the month of January, we've approached and examined our theme of intention from several directions. This morning, we're going to take a look at land acknowledgments, statements intended to be respectful of the fact that the lands we occupy today were not simply given to us by the native tribes that lived on them for thousands of years. Showing respect is a good thing. But acknowledgement is not enough. There needs to be action in order for them to help heal and empower the original stewards of this land. As Unitarian Universalists, we continue to open ourselves as a faith community to deepening our exploration of what has been called the dominant culture paradigm, and to move instead toward a multicultural paradigm in which we put into practice not only the principles from our sources, but more of those traditions that come from them, particularly those that encourage direct experience, as in the first source, which reads like this: that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. And the last source, which guides us toward spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions, which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. Here at WOOF, our Eighth Principle Exploration Group is taking a deep dive into the shift toward multicultural practices, and our Active Hope conversations, which are happening through the month of February, will encourage finding our way to a more sustainable future. Earlier, we heard the Earth referred to as our mother. And in just a minute, we will turn our attention to a music video titled Water is Life, in which, if you choose to watch it, you can directly experience the Indigenous Water Protectors' resistance to the pipelines that threaten their sacred lands and water. This film is intense, and some of you may find it hard to watch. Parental discretion is advised here. Water is Life will be followed by a quiet time for reflection, prayer, or meditation, as you may wish. And then we will hear from Trish Jordan. But let us begin with today's reading. Today's reading is the Washington County Land Acknowledgement, as prepared by representatives of Confederate tribes of Grand Ronde, Nez Perce, Siletz, and Yavapai. We want to acknowledge the people on whose land we live, the Atfalati Kalapuyans, also known as the Tualatin Band of Kalapuyans, the very first inhabitants of Washington County. We are grateful for the land we are on, Kalapuyan land. Signers of the Willamette Valley Treaty of 1855 were removed from their homelands to the Grand Ronde Indian Reservation. Today, those descendants are tribal members of Grand Ronde and Siletz, carrying on the traditions and cultures of their ancestors. We acknowledge and express gratitude for the ancestors of this place and recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their continuation in our community. Please reflect on the role that government has played in their painful colonial history, and reflect as well on the resilience and healing of the Indigenous land and communities. We would like to invite everyone to collaborate and work together with the tribes to take care of the land and water and the people who inhabit these spaces.
Are we here?
Understand this fight. Mother is home, water is
life. Wake the mountains, summon the seas. We are the lions, the roots of the trees. To feel the rhythm, hear the call. Together we rise, forever we fall.
Something happening here. What it is, what been happening for years. These men with guns over there, pushing back brothers and sisters and children just cause they stand with a peaceful prayer. I swear, oh Lord, we do not need just another black serpent beneath our feet. Just another tool in a corporate scheme meant to keep the masses on their knees. Snake charmer, your karma will come quick. People sound the alarm. Stand for the future, stand for the kingdom. One people, one earth, one tribe, one nation.
Thank you. thank you, everybody, for being here today. We've just had some really beautiful weather this last week, and I hope you were out there enjoying the sunshine. My name is Trish Jordan. I'm the director for Red Lodge Transition Services. I'm a registered nurse, and I help run a transition center for Native American women just outside Oregon City. Most of the work that we do at Red Lodge has to do with reducing incarceration and reincarceration, also known as recidivism, for Native Americans. I've been doing that for about 15 years now. We haven't really been able to go into the prisons for the last 2 years because of COVID, and it's been a real challenge to try and maintain connection. It's really important that people in prison have a connection to the outside world. So a lot of my time is you know, creatively inventing programs like Native American coloring books and, you know, sending in movies and just calendars and cards for the holidays, things like that. Some of the people that we got letters from said that was the only card they got for Christmas. So those things are really important. I just thought I would share a little bit of Oregon history with you today, because as Native Americans, we have a lot of our history that doesn't get shared in the history books. And we practice oral traditions, so these stories are passed down through the generations. An elder from Warm Springs shared this story with me. Her people are indigenous to the Tide Valley area, which is probably about 30 miles south of the Dalles, Oregon. If you know where Tide Valley is, it's just a little blink in the road. Anyway, they lived along the Deschutes River, and there's a place down there called Shears Bridge. There's a bridge that now goes across the river, and the village was near the river, and they saw a big cloud of dust coming up, and they wondered what that was, and then as it started to get later in the day, the dust kind of settled down, and so several of the natives went to investigate, and they saw the pioneers. This was during the 1850s, during the mass immigration here into the Oregon Territory, and the wagon trains were circled, and there was strange music, and the native people were dancing, joyfully dancing. And so the pioneers were joyfully dancing. And so the native people said, well, they must be really spiritual people because they're really, you know, dancing and giving it, you know, a lot of energy. Dancing is really important to us in our culture. We believe that every step that we take is a prayer, and there's lots of different dances in our culture, just like there are in every culture. But that was their interpretation, that these must be really spiritual people. And then the next day, they witnessed the pioneers trying to lower their wagons over the side of a cliff. And if you've ever been up to the Shears Bridge area, there is a great big wall of rock, just a real steep rock wall to get down to the river. And the ropes broke, and one of the wagons plunged down to the ground and killed a woman and a child, and the men from the village were just, you know, everyone was shocked and concerned, and so the men ran to get their ropes to help, and these ropes 130 years ago, you know, were made out of vines, and so the Indian men went to help the pioneer men, and they helped them lower the rest of the wagons safely down, and then they helped them find a place in the river to put the wagons in and float them down across the river. And the native people had a little bridge made of vines that they took up and down when they needed it to cross the river. And so they put that little tiny bridge up, and it was like just like one person at a time could go across the river on that little tiny vine bridge. And that's how they helped the pioneers get across the Deschutes. And it took 2 days for them to get all the people across that bridge and the wagons, and everybody was really happy. The Native people, we were always about celebrating and having food, and so there was a lot of food involved, and they felt sorry for a lot of these pioneers, because some of them, they had like rags tied to their feet. They didn't even have shoes anymore. They had raggedy clothes. They'd lost a lot of weight on the journey. And they just had hardly anything. The pioneer women were so grateful, and they wanted to gift something to the Native women. And all they really had was like macaroni. And so they had like big handfuls of macaroni that they handed the Native women, you know, say, you know, here, this is what we have. And of course, there was a language barrier. And so the Native women thought that they were beads, and they made beautiful necklaces out of the macaronis like this. You know, they strung them up with their sinew, and they had big layers of macaroni necklaces. And then some of the women slept in those necklaces, and then next morning they woke up and their necklaces were all crunched up and broken, and they're like, well, what kind of beads do they give us? Look at these beads they broke, you know. And I can't remember what they gave the men. The men gifted the Indian men some things too, but it was kind of like that, where they're like, well, what is this gift for? You know, how do you use this? And so there was a real real disconnect in regard to communication and how to, you know, the differences in our cultures. And the chief that was from that band, the Taivan band, appointed a warrior to take the pioneers over the mountain. And the Thai people knew how to get over the mountain, because they would go every season and pick huckleberries. And a lot of times they'd go even further, and they would harvest eels from the Willamette Falls, or they would gather reed materials for their baskets and things. So they knew the trail. They knew how to get to what we now know as Oregon City. And the Warm Springs people helped with that. So that's something that's not written in our history books. And I think that it's important to recognize that the Native people of this area really participated a lot in welcoming people and helping them through their journey. They never imagined that they would end up on reservations. We didn't think, and I'm not indigenous to this area. My grandparents came here during the Depression. So anytime I go into a reservation or a ceded area, I always think of the people who that land is truly belonging to, you know, because there's a lot of reverence and there's a lot of sacred sites still on these lands. We have sacred sites here in Oregon City and up at Mount Hood, and sacred foods that are still gathered here. So even though the original inhabitants don't live here, there are Indian people that live here, and we really try and do our best to make sure that we're respectful and that we recognize that the ancestors are still here, and what the original inhabitants of this area brought to all of us. You know, in 1855, that was kind of the year that a lot of treaties here in the Northwest got signed with Indian tribes, and it was either you sign these treaties or, you know, you risk being killed, because we're going to take what we want, And I know that that's a hard thing to hear, but that is the reality. And so, like most tribes, you hear of them being confederated. What that means is there's numerous tribes that are gathered up, and a lot of these tribes, they had different chiefs, they had different languages, they had different customs, and so it didn't matter to the U.S. government. They just, you know, an Indian was an Indian, and so they were put on reservations, and we have 9 federally recognized reservations here in Oregon. And then just kind of like, you guys got to figure this out. Figure it out. And because most Native people had a real wide range of gathering, hunting, and gathering, like 70% of their time was just preparing for winter. And so without being able to follow the seasons and the food chain, you know, the Indians were starving. And then the government brought in what they call rations, which is lard and flour and, you know, cows, things like that. And so these were totally different food sources than the Native people have ever experienced. And what happened with that was, you know, a lot of diseases started to happen because the food wasn't good for us, and it's you know, still not good for us. That processed food is still not good for us. But people made do with what they had and were determined to survive. The reservation was essentially a concentration camp. Prior to colonialism, we never had prisons. We did not practice a lot of the things that we now do practice with that. This, you know, we have assimilated, and so there's a lot of things that we took on that are really negative behaviors that we need to work on. For instance, we never spanked our children. That was just like a real big no-no because children are sacred, and we never disrespected women because, you know, women are sacred. Those things are learned behaviors. And we're trying to get back to, you know, really practicing our traditions and how we treat each other. So, those things are really important in our teachings when we go into the prisons. A lot of the times the people that we work with have never had, they've never been close to their culture or their traditions. And the reason is a lot of times because of the substance use disorders. We have a lot of alcohol and drug abuse in our communities, and that comes from the historical trauma. It's directly linked to the traumas that people went through. You know, Native people really suffered. There was just a lot of things that happened that were very, very wrong and very hurtful. And it was like, it was genocide in a lot of ways. And in 1902, the estimate of the entire population of Native Americans to the original population was 1% left. So we went to the brink of extinction and actually came back, just like the eagle, you know, was on an extinction list for several years and has come back. Native people, there's about 2% of the Oregon population. We have about 50,000 natives in the Portland metro area. And, you know, we're still strong in our beliefs. And for those tribes that know their culture, they still work very hard to teach that culture to their children and pass on those ways. For every elder that we lose, you know, we lose a piece of that, and that's always really sad. But it's just amazing that we have any of that even left, you know, to have the language and to have know the ceremonies and to have these things is, to me, it's really amazing that we were able to hold on to it. And the only reason we are able to hold on to it is because we are of an oral tradition. We didn't write it down. If we'd written it down and tried to preserve it, it would be gone. So that's why it's really important. And the movie that you just got through watching, you know, that's a really important documentary, and it provides testimony to our strength and our love for the earth. We refer to the earth as our mother because we know that we are of the earth. We are of the water and we are of the earth. And the reason we know that is that 70% of our body, over 70% of our body is water, and a lot of our body fluids, like our tears and our other internal body fluids, are salty. And so we know that, you know, we have a connection to the ocean. We know that we cannot survive more than a few days without water. And our bodies are made up of all these elements that are found in the earth: zinc, selenium, magnesium, potassium, sodium, iron, copper. All of those things are found in the earth. There isn't anything in our body that isn't found in the earth. And so we've always known that we are of the water and of the earth. A lot of creation stories, and every tribe has their own creation stories, has the, you know, we're coming from the earth, you know, people are, you know, born from the earth. And so we practice conservation for thousands and thousands of years. I mean, even though the resources were tremendously plentiful, even, you know, 200 years ago, we were still very conservative. We never took more than what we needed. We always prayed before taking the life of an animal or even taking the life of a plant. Always practiced gratitude with everything that was harvested. And even today, you know, there's certain ceremonies that people have to go through, and they have to have really good standing in their tribe to go out and dig those roots and harvest those animals and be a part of the ceremonies that we have today. So we still, as much as we can, we still practice that conservation and that reverence. And that's really what this land acknowledgement is all about, is to be respectful, to be reverent, to be mindful, to not forget the past, because we have to make sure that we don't repeat our mistakes. And we can't take back what was done to the Native Americans, but we can at least honor them with a meaningful statement in saying, we recognize that, you know, that you are the indigenous landowners. And we never even, like, said we owned the land. The land owned us. You know, we are of the land. We are of the earth. We never had that concept of putting up fences. When people went into somebody else's territory, they had permission to do that. Sometimes they were intermarried, and that gave them permission. But other times, you know, they had relationships with other tribes, and they didn't just, like, assume that they could just, like, go in and just take over. When you go into the longhouse, which you know, most of the tribes around here have longhouses. Families have certain places where they sit. Those are their traditional spots, you know, and when they have summer gatherings and, you know, families have certain places where they camp, those are their certain spots. And so it would be really disrespectful for somebody that didn't know to just go in and just assume that they could take any space in the room or any space in that campground. And that's kind of where, you know, Native people are coming from on the land acknowledgement is, you know, we're not here to take the land back, but we are here to ask that you be respectful, not just of the ancestors that lived here, but of the earth. And I think that that's really important, that we all work toward, you know, recycling and reducing our waste and keeping the water clean. Let's do what we can, because right now the earth is really hurting, and we know that. You know, we're in a climate crisis, and the earth has to maintain what they call homeostasis, which is a medical term for regulation, right? Just like our bodies have to maintain homeostasis. Otherwise, we get really sick and things get out of whack, and then we end up in the hospital, or we end up, you know, really, really sick. So we have to do what is right for the earth. And when we do what's right for the earth, then we do what's right for us, because we are of the water and we are of the earth. And I think that that's one of the most important teachings that Native people have to bring to this world. And not just Native people, all Indigenous people that I know of feel this way about the earth. You know, the poor Amazon Indians are still fighting to try and you know, keep their little space. So it's important that, you know, that we practice conservation, and we practice kindness and gratitude. Those are all in our culture and tradition, and it's important that we work together as not just as Native people, but, you know, for all people. You know, we talk about all men being equal, but they're not. You know, we talk about equality, we talk about equity, but really we haven't achieved that. Native American people primarily are living at or below the poverty level. Over 38% of Native American people are incarcerated. It's higher, 38% higher than the national average, you know, end up incarcerated. Substance use disorders, like I said, really drive that. It isn't, historical trauma isn't something that you just, like, get over. You know, yeah, it happened a long time ago. You should be over it by now. No. Because it's passed down. It's what happened to our grandparents in the boarding schools, being taken away from their parents. I can't imagine as a parent to have my children taken away. I'd want to die, you know, or I'd want to drink, or I'd want to do something to reduce that pain. And then those children being taken away from their parents and being, you know, punished for speaking their language or trying to practice their traditions or sing their songs. That was so traumatizing to those children. And majority of our trauma comes from our childhood, right? And then those behaviors that we have created, you know, in relation to that trauma, get passed down because that's how we treat our children. And like I said, we didn't used to do that. We never hit our children, never disrespected women. So a lot of these things, it just takes generations to get through it. And I really think that this land acknowledgement is a part of getting through that, helping to heal some of that hurt, and working together and having collaborative relationships with our neighbors and our other organizations and businesses and churches. And, you know, we're all in this together, and we need to get through this. We need to be aware. We need to not repeat our mistakes over and over. I think that was all I was going to share today. And I really, really appreciate you all being here today. I hope I didn't ramble too much. I just wish you good health, light hearts, strong spirits, and prosperity for this coming new year. Thank you so much. Om Mathakliasi.
At this time in our service, we pause to consider the gifts we have received from our Mother Earth and the generous spirits of family and community. A few moments to reflect on the circle of gratitude and giving. Your love offerings, whether in the form of financial support or gifts of your time and talent, are precious to our Wolf community. This week, we are especially grateful to Rick Tangerman and the band of enthusiastic volunteers who erected the new pavilion on our patio. It will be the starting point for today's blessing of the land that begins at 1 o'clock. Join me now, please, in speaking our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so we may learn from the generosity of others. As we extinguish the flame of our chalice, marking the end of our time together today, may we carry its warmth and its light within us as we make our way through whatever is to be until we meet again.
Carry the flame.